You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I'll let Bobby Warsaw tell me how I did it.
I think he's the philosopher of football.
I like to have some more derbies.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in New York City. I'm David Goss, and I am joined by, well, no one on set, really, but I'm never alone when I'm with you, our listeners, our fans. Thank you so much for being here. We've got a huge show coming up. Andrew Wiebe's out in L.A. He's going to talk a little Chicharito with former U.S. national team player and former Liga MX Golden Boot winner Hercules Gomez. He also sat down with Mark Dos Santos to talk about 2020 coming up for Vancouver off the back of a record signing in Lucas Cavallini, and a little fun with the Austrian winger from New York Red Bulls, Danny Royer, who will talk trash about talking trash with Andrew Wiebe, who can't really talk trash. Now, you notice I am by myself, which is okay. I don't mind. I like a little bit of arm space, and honestly, I didn't even wear deodorant today. It makes it easier for me. Anyway, Andrew's in L.A. Kalen Carr, I think he's either in Paris or Beijing or Melbourne, because with him, you never know, but it's always something glorious. And Matt Doyle cannot walk right now, so he cannot come into the studio. He has no feet or something like that, whether he's the armchair analyst or the wheelchair analyst. He's always the number one analyst in our hearts. So you can hit him up on Twitter, because even if he's in a coma, he will be on Twitter. That's where he lives. And by myself, but there's so much going on in MLS that it was easy to pack this show in. We've got Pablo Maurer coming up. He's going to talk about Edson Flores, a record signing for DC United. We've got the general manager, Gerard Nienkamp, of FC Cincinnati coming on as well. They've already made a record signing, a designated player, in Yuya Kubo. He says these are a huge 48 hours. There could be a second record broken for them in these 48 hours if they are able to bring in Gaston Pereira. And he says it's on the verge. We'll see if it happens or not. We'll talk to him in a little bit. But that goes into the larger theme about Major League Soccer. I'm going to hit you with a little knowledge, and then we'll get into the interviews. But let's start with this. There are 26 teams in MLS in 2020. Two of them are expansion teams in Nashville and Inter-Miami. So of the 24 teams left in MLS, 15 of them have set transfer records in the last 12 months on a single player. And it's not just the old schools, Henry, Beckham, Lothar Matthäus. Let's bring in big names who are at the ends of their career and who will be on a poster and get people into this stadium. No, this is different. All 15 of those players are under the age of 30. This is in their prime, guys who are here to win, who are here to change the records in MLS. And it's not just the big clubs. It's not just Atlanta and Toronto FC. It's everyone. It's Columbus and Lucas Zelarayán. It's DC United. It's potentially Colorado. It's FC Cincinnati. It is the reality in MLS now that you need to spend to compete. You need to spend to win. And these guys coming in have raised the bar of the quality in this league to a level we've never seen before. And week in and week out, it's another rumor and another record being broken. It's been impressive to watch in Major League Soccer, and it's going to continue to be impressive to watch. One guy who wouldn't even break a record, it sounds like, with his feet because of where the numbers have gone in MLS is Chicharito, but he would change hearts and minds around this country and the region about this league. Let's go out to LA, and Andrew Wiebe sat down with Hercules Gomez a little bit more about Chicharito.
10 minutes with a lot of current players, 10 minutes with a former player, Hercules Gomez on Extra
way
Time.
Former. I'm way on the other side, bro.
Come on, man. Just a couple of years now on ESPN, doing his thing late night. We see you on ESPN FC as well, and of course on Twitter.
Yeah.
How's this life for you?
It's good. How's Cali treating you?
I mean, it's a little chilly, but
you brought the weather.
Yeah, I'm a little cold.
Can you explain to the people if they're not watching us what we're looking at right now? This backdrop.
Beautiful, beautiful downtown LA, right through Bank of California Stadium. We have so many interviews coming up from this site over the next couple months. But let's talk Chicharito.
Okay.
They did it on the last show. I didn't get my opportunity. I think it's time for both Chicharito and MLS to make this thing happen. And then today, after it felt like it was basically done and dusted, the reports start leaking out. Roger Martinez says of CBS, oh, there might be some blips. And then Jeff Carlisle confirms. I hear you spoke to Jeff. What do you think about this little quote-unquote bump in the road?
I spoke to a lot of people. And listen, Jeff told me no more than he told you guys. Mm-hmm. He told me the same thing. Reports of other outlets I cannot comment on. I don't know their sources. I can tell you my sources, and my sources yesterday told me a few things. That the deal was close to all but done. That all was missing was a few minor details and the signature. That Chicharito would not be announced yesterday, like I told you guys yesterday. That he may not even be announced today. It could be next week. And that Chicharito would not make more than Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Mm. These are the things I do know. I come to find out this morning that there was a planned announcement that would have been made today, this morning. Here we are, past this morning, no announcement. That is all I know. Things advance very quickly when you're negotiating. I've been on the other part of this. Mm-hmm. I've negotiated with an agent. So as a player, you sit and wait. And then I've been my own agent. And things change very, very quickly. What I do know about the Sevilla situation is Julian Lopetegui, the coach of Sevilla, said, Luke De Jong is my 9. Chicharito right now is my 2. I need to bring in another forward for depth. If that forward comes in, Chicharito would be my 3. So Chicharito all but given the green light to leave. The signing for Sevilla of a new forward was less than 24 hours ago. So that is still fresh. He has the green light. I don't know what is holding this up. I still suspect it'll get done. Who knows if it's on the back end, him negotiating more percentage on image rights, because if it is a lower salary, let's just say it's a $5 million salary. Yeah. Let's just say.
Just for the...
That's what's being thrown around. For argument's sake. $5 million in California is not $5 million in the rest of the world. Net versus gross, and you're talking about maybe $2.6, $2.7 million. That Chicharito can command easily in Mexico. So I think he knows this. And if I were Chicharito and his people, I'd say, I'm worth a hell of a lot more to you off the field than maybe on the field. And if that's the case, I want some of this pie too. So maybe that's the holdup, is the negotiation on the back end of image rights. I would suspect, I don't know. I don't get paid those dollars to figure that out, to be on the agent side of the table. But right now, there is no deal done. Doesn't mean it won't be done. But as of this moment, no Chicharito.
Let's say it gets done. Let's just, again, for the sake of argument, this deal gets done. Sometime we're talking about him in an LA Galaxy uniform. What's he going to mean to this city, which you now call your own?
Yes.
To this league, to this club? What will it mean? What sort of impact will it have? Where will it rank in the all-time MLS signings for you?
Ooh, it would have to be 3rd.
Beckham,
Zlatan.
Ah.
Yeah, and I put Zlatan over Chicharito just because of the cultural impact. Chicharito's not going to go on late nights. He may go on late nights in, you know, the Latin circuits, but he's not going to be on Jimmy Kimmel. You know, he's not going to be, you know, bro-ing it up with some Hollywood stars.
Maybe doing skits.
Yeah, skits, you know, that type of thing. He may not have a role in Hollywood like Zlatan after this. So Zlatan had a cultural significance, and everybody around the world, regardless of your nationality, knows Zlatan. And Zlatan, honestly, if we could say, if it wasn't for Cristiano or Messi, many would have called probably the best on the planet, easily. Chicharito's not in that ballpark. But Chicharito here, on this side of the hemisphere, here in this market in Los Angeles, blows Zlatan out of the water. And listen to what I'm saying. The market here in California for Chicharito is greater significance than any other player besides David Beckham. David Beckham, you throw him in anywhere, is David Beckham. And he's the most important signing in the history of the league. And he's the before and after. He's the parting of the waters. Mm-hmm. You can't convince me anything otherwise. There would be no...
BCAD.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Chicharito is this as close as this gets. And especially for Los Angeles Galaxy, I should say, in a market where they're playing second fiddle. And this is a former Galaxy player that's telling you that they're playing second fiddle. Alejandro Moreno, former Galaxy striker, will tell you the same thing. I live in this city. I work downtown, centrally located. The guerrilla marketing theme that they've done, the be with LAFC, it's cool, it's hip, it's swag, it's a brand new thing. Look at the bells and whistle. Look at our stadium. Look at our players. Look at our best player in the league. Mm-hmm. It's working. And there's been a divide. And slowly but surely, this LAFC team has taken over. The Galaxy needed this. They needed this on the field because who's going to replace the Zlatan goals? And they needed this off the field. Who's going to create that buzz? It's Chicharito. He's the most important signing for them, obviously. No question about it. And he may be even more important than Zlatan in a lot of factors.
So the goals. This is a signing that I think has massive upside. But I also wonder, because Chicharito at the club level has not been everything to a club. Maybe Chivas for a year before he was sold. Maybe Bayer Leverkusen for a year and a half.
Let me ask you one question.
Yeah.
When Chicharito plays, what happens?
People watch. And he usually scores goals.
When Chicharito doesn't score goals, it's because he's not getting on the field. But you give Chicharito a consistent run of minutes, he's going to score goals.
So you have no worries about production. None at all.
Oh, of course. Because how can you...
It's been since maybe 15, 16 since he had a big year.
Whose shoes is he filling? If it was Giovanni Dos Santos that left and Chicharito comes in, I'd say, hey, don't worry about the goals. But Zlatan's taking 50-plus goals with them in two seasons.
How about this? And I'm telling you right now, nobody should compare Chicharito to Zlatan. It's unfair to Zlatan. Unfair for Chicharito.
But it's going to happen.
It's going to happen, man.
Because they're going to say, how come Zlatan at 37, 38 years old was doing this with a bum knee?
Because he's a freak. He's an alien.
And Chicharito can't do this at 31. I agree with you. But that's not what people are going to say. Here's the problem. I've never seen anybody in this league, and quite frankly, most leagues around the world, physically dominate an opponent like Zlatan. You could literally just throw it up to him, have him body people. He controls it any which way he can and does something ridiculous. Chicharito's not that type of player. He's going to depend on service. He's going to depend on the Galaxy team. And this is where I have concerns for them, because as a striker, as a former striker, I can tell you, it's a hell of a lot easier to score a goal when you're even or in the lead. If you're chasing the game down a goal, you're not going to have tons of opportunities. You're not going to have many opportunities.
Yeah, they'll get done.
It's not going to happen. And Chicharito is going to depend on service. But if you're chasing the game, that service is going to be limited. You look at who he's got. I mean, you've got Cristian Pavón. You've got Joe Benny Corona. Where's the rest of the creativity?
Alexander Katai's not bad, man.
Alexander Katai's a good shout.
Yeah. So what do you think? Is this, should it happen?
Absolutely.
On the field, off the field.
It checks every box.
Off the field, we have no doubt. On the field, will it be a success?
Checks the boxes.
Will the Galaxy be better with Chicharito and with a different sort of team and with defensive? We assume they've already got some defensive reinforcements. Will this be a better team with Chicharito than it was with Zlatan?
Absolutely. Absolutely, because you played for Zlatan when Zlatan's on the field. You know, Galaxy were a mess last year. They were a mess. And Zlatan was great, but because they catered to Zlatan to play that way. And yeah, he got his goals, but where are the playoffs wins, you know?
They're not there.
And he made playoffs once, you know? I think it'll be a better team with Chicharito because I think he's a more coachable player. And listen, you could say what you want. Zlatan is great. He's a legend. But he's not necessarily the easiest teammate to be around. He's not necessarily the easiest player to coach. Chicharito is. And that's going to make you a better team. Guillermo Barros Schelotto... Finally, por fin, we're going to say we're going to finally get to see what he can do with
his vision.
His vision, exactly.
Not Zlatan's vision.
Exactly.
What is Hercules Gomez's vision? Tell us where you can find us. Ahora y nunca.
Ahora o nunca.
O nunca.
Ahora nunca, which is now or never in Spanish. ESPN Deportes, late night, 11 o'clock Pacific, every night, Monday to Friday on FC.
Just grinding, bro.
I'm grinding. I'm trying. And then I'm calling games for Deportes. I call at this lovely venue at the home of the Galaxy in Carson. I'll be around the league. Anytime you need me, I'm here.
Yeah, follow him on Twitter. Back to you, Dave.
Thanks so much to Andrew and Herc. We'll have more from Andrew Wiebe coming up in just a little bit from out in L.A. Chicharito could be a game-changing signing in Major League Soccer, but someone who is a game-changing signing is Edson Flores, a record signing for DC United already in this offseason, the Peruvian international coming over from Liga MX. And who else to talk about it, and who else to help me? Because right now, I'm in an abandoned studio, and no one knows abandoned places and buildings better than staff writer for The Athletic, Pablo Maurer. Pablo, what should I do? Should I just start taking pictures?
Yeah, I wish I was there. I could take some tasteful portraits of you in the abandoned studio. You know, I don't know. But yeah, how's it feel? You're operating without a safety net here. Are you doing okay? Or?
Yeah, well, I feel like you. So normally, what do? You just jump fences, break in, and then just start taking pictures? Because that's what I did today.
Yeah, really. Broke into the MLS studios. I don't know if it's going really well for you. Yeah, pretty much. That sums up what I do.
It's the offseason. No one's paying attention, really. Let's get to the big news from D.C. Edson Flores, of course, coming over from Morelia in Mexico. I mentioned it, the rumor is about $5 million on the transfer fee. Let's start big, though, because he has to replace Wayne Rooney, whether on the field or off the field. Of course, Rooney, a global superstar, but Flores, in his prime, Peruvian national team player, a good year in Liga MX, can he make the same type of impact for DC United?
Well, that really is the question. It's funny. I've thought a lot about this over the past couple of days. As far as replacing Rooney's impact on the field, I think the team is probably more leaning on Ole Kumar to do that. And I think he can probably pick up a fair amount of that slack. You know, he's a proven, obviously, MLS goal scorer. I think obviously the more important topic here is what you touched on, which is replacing Rooney's off the field impact. And hear me out here. Like I think in a lot of ways the Flores signing has the potential to be bigger for the club's long term health on the field and off of it than Wayne's signing has. Because to me it's like you said, an exciting playmaker in the prime of his career. It's also a Peruvian international and, you know, coming to a team that is, let's be honest, maybe like badly, lacked in its ability to connect with Hispanics in this market, which obviously, you know, there are tons of Central American, South American, Mexicans in the DMV, you know, D.C., Maryland, Virginia. And to me, you know, if they build off this Flores signing, it has the potential that to help them reconnect with that community, to help them obviously tremendously on the field, you know. So I think it's a pretty brilliant move. Certainly a better move tactically on and off the field, I think, than pursuing a big name Euro guy.
What do you think went into this being the signing or the first one that they made? Was there a slew of guys you think that they were looking at and saying who works, or was this always the laser focus for DC as the guy to step up into this spot?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you they've had their eyes on Flores since last summer. I mean, it's been a while, actually, on a few Peruvians, a few Peruvian internationals, but certainly they've been after Flores for a minute. Obviously, they also had Brian Lozano on their radar. It's a whole different thing. We can talk about it at some point, but he has been their guy for a while. You know, that's not to say that if they had gotten Lozano at a lower price, they wouldn't have maybe necessarily gone that direction or done both players, but certainly Flores is a player that's been on the radar for, you know, at least 6 months.
You mentioned the style that he brings. Give people who don't know him or people outside of the DC area who haven't looked up, you know, what's going on, what he's going to be like, and have you spoken to him? Has he talked at all about what coming to the club, the league, this market is going to be like?
Yeah, I haven't met the player personally yet. He's obviously a pacey, creative guy, mostly played on the left. He's played centrally and on the right, though. I think, obviously, DC's set on the left wing. You know, they're obviously maybe looking at him more as a replacement for Lucho, as sort of that attacking central playmaker role. He is, has great passing vision. He's also... I sort of said this when Luciano Costa was originally connected to PSG and I sort of thought he was going to leave. I wrote a story that I never published that, basically the point of it was DC needs to replace that guy with a similar style of player. And what I meant by that was actually that he sort of passes the eye test, you know, that he has sort of those quick feet and that flair sort of style that can appeal to even casual fans, you know, sort of like new fans that DC United are still sort of trying to bring into the fold. And I think Flores is a great fit in that regard. He's fun to watch. He's a smart player, but also he's the type of player who like lends himself well just to YouTube compilations with terrible dubstep music on them, you know? So I think, you know, all signs right now are that he's a great fit. Obviously, we'll have to see what happens. It can be difficult for Latin American players occasionally in this league, but I think there's some good days ahead potentially.
a lot of excitement, especially for those compilations. We've been needing a little bit more of a heavy beat in our backgrounds. In Major League Soccer, you mentioned one of the other names who could link up with Flores and make some amazing moments. That would be Brian Lozano, currently 25-year-old Uruguayan at Santos Laguna. Has played for them already this season, actually extended his contract. Is there still some potential that he could be coming to D.C.?
I mean, theoretically. But, you know, you'd have to think the price tag on Lozano. You know, it was rumored that LAFC were willing to pay $12 million for the player, and that Santos turned that down. I don't really know how true that is. DC have his discovery rights. I do think that you know, he would come to this league for less than probably $9-10 million and a salary that would be comparable to, you know, what DC is paying Flores, you know, between $2-3 million a year. And I just can't see DC United making a, you know, if you total the contracts up, like a $30 million investment in one window. They can't really be blamed for doing that. So, no, I think that one, honestly, is probably dead in the water. But, you know, it's a player who's mid-20s, still has a huge upside. Lots of MLS teams are interested in him. You know, Miami, Portland apparently expressed press interest. So I think there's probably a good chance that we haven't seen the last of the Lozano to MLS rumors. And obviously, from Santos's perspective, they inked him on a 4-year deal, but they're essentially protecting our investment, you know, so I don't think that the club necessarily intends to keep him for that long. So we'll see what happens.
So whether he comes to DC or not, the fact that DC United's in that conversation, the fact that they close on Flores, is this a different era for DC United, or is this just a Rooney was a big piece, a one-off replacement for that to try and get back to the level they were?
You know, I mean, I think DC is always, I don't think DC is ever going to be in the sort of top three or four as far as roster spend in this league. They just don't have the resources that, you know, Atlanta United does. I do think, though, that their reality has changed. I think they, you know, they're the ownership of the club, the front office of the club is probably pretty aware of that. I think they understand that fans have higher expectations. I also think they understand probably the you know, the market here fan-wise. These are smart, savvy fans. Obviously, they watch a ton of soccer, be it MLS or anything else. So I think there is an understanding there that many fans in this area, especially Hispanic fans, just want to see quality players. You know, so to a lot of people, a signing like Flores is you know, just as exciting as the Rooney signing. You know, I, the other thing is, I don't think, you know, let's be honest here. Like, Wayne Rooney was maybe a little past his prime, but as far as I'm concerned, he's like a top five player name-wise. I mean, there's just not, you know, as far as appealing to casual fans in the United States who are not diehard soccer people, it's literally just Messi, Ronaldo, Zlatan probably, and Rooney. You know, those would be like the players that they know immediately, right? So Wayne, in that way, is an irreplaceable sort of signing. You can go out and sign Mesut Ozil, Luka Modric, whatever, Modric, but it's not going to have that same sort of effect at the gate. And if you're honestly, like a lot of MLS teams, DC included, I think they're looking at these DP signings now as, you know, from a more like holistic sort of view. You know, if we are going to sign an older Euro guy, it's going to tick a lot of boxes. And you know, very few players would tick the amount of boxes, if you will, that Wayne did.
Pablo, I'm here by myself, but you're doing my job for me, so I'm just going to leave. Now you got to talk about Luka Modric, though, because you were the one who broke the rumor that he could be a potential signing in the summer. His contract is up, so you could potentially get him for no transfer fee, which allows you to put a little bit more into the salary. Should people at all get excited about this, or is it just fantasy?
Well... you never know, right? I mean, the Mesut Ozil rumor, for example, that flittered out there, and I think I reported on the fact that in my view, at least, it had more to do with the fact that he's opening a coffee shop at Audi Field, right?
So, can we talk for a second, Pablo, on the side about how random it is that a soccer star is opening a coffee shop at Audi Field? Like, that alone made no sense.
Yeah. He's diversifying his portfolio, I guess. But on the other hand, that's like, that is an in for DC United with that player, right?
Yep.
So it's not disingenuous to say that, you know, I'm sure at some point when they were talking about, you know, a French press, they may have talked about Jejun press or whatever. I don't know. You know, like, but that joke is not mine, by the way. I can't remember who invented it. I think George, maybe George Croatia invented it. But,
nice. Trademark.
Anyways, as far as Vodrick goes, it's tough to tell. I mean, I can definitely tell you that, you know, that DC have been in touch with his people multiple times. They traveled to meet his people, you know, had pretty serious conversations about it. You know, so, but, you know, at the same time, I think it sort of boils down to how much money DC are willing to spend on something like that. I mean, it would be, you know, they could get him on a free, but you have to figure that he's a $7 to $10 million player. This is a guy who just won the Golden Ball 2 years ago, World Cup, you know, best player of the tournament 2 years ago. A guy who is sort of now being rotated in and out of the lineup at Madrid. But at the same time, when he plays, he still sort of sets the world on fire. I actually think Madrid might not even be too keen to let him go. They could easily bring him back for another year, you know. So I think there's an element of fantasy to this, but I also think that DC have had conversations with his representation, so you certainly can't rule it out. You know, man, a lot of people said about Rooney, you know, that he would never come to MLS, for example, but Rooney obviously came on a free and a lot cheaper, you know, $3 to $4 million a year, something like that. So I don't know. It is, you know, like you mentioned, it is interesting now. One thing Rooney has done for DC United is they find themselves, you know, when these rumors crop up, they make the international press very quickly. You know, when I reported the Modric thing, which I was Modric thing, I don't know why I struggle with that name so much.
Because you've been watching British announcers quickly, say it wrong for 15 years.
Across the pond, et cetera. So DC now does, because of Rooney, have a sort of reputation. The same way maybe the Galaxy and other teams, you know, people put credence in rumors like these because of the team name and who they've been attached to in the past. I do think that's part of United's new reality.
It's exciting times right now for DC United. The future seems bright. A fairly established group right now. Of course, Ben Olsen coming back. But one thing that is going away, they have left RFK for their games, but now they have officially left RFK completely as a club. They will no longer be training or using it as an office. Pablo, you are Mr. RFK. That's what we just decided to call you like 20 minutes ago. So as RFK goes away, as this ends, give us what you'll think of or any specific stories, any moments of your great times with the Raccoons.
Well, so certainly they're out of the building. They're still going to use, I think, for a couple more months, the training fields, which are like maybe an eighth of a mile down the street, but there are no locker rooms there. The team obviously has moved out of the offices. So certainly they're done with the stadium itself. You know, I think of RFK, I always tell people the first thing I think of is I moved to D.C. and I want to say 06. And I went to a Champions League game there. I sat in the upper deck because there were, I think, 35,000 people there. They likely were playing a Salvadoran or Honduran team. And the power went out like two or three times. You know, it's very like, you know, a lot of RFK things. But I do remember, you know, I was raised by Spanish parents. I spent a lot of time in my youth in Spain. So I was exposed to sort of that soccer culture. And obviously, it didn't exist in the U.S. So I grew up going to Nashville Metro's A-League games, like 150 people. But my first game at RFK was that game, and I remember sitting in the upper deck and looking down at the supporters section, which was, believe me when I said it back then, it was almost a little scary. You know, it's like a wild scene, and I just thought to myself, man, this actually exists in this country. And this is in the mid-2000s when, you know, before Portland, before Seattle, before all these teams entered MLS that sort of, you know, adopted this kind of modern supporters culture, you know, that you see in a lot of teams now. This existed back then. Their average attendance was also among the highest in the league. They, you know, they had some of the best players, obviously, constantly. So I associate RFK with that, you know, maybe that, like, authentic, some of the only authentic soccer culture that existed back then. And then obviously, I have my own, like, to write a book about the past 10 years of my life in that place and nearly getting injured by falling things or getting sick by things growing in the wall or the wildlife that I've seen in that place. Or, I mean, it's just, you know, it's a special place, man. And obviously for someone like me that has an attachment to decrepit buildings, this is both an exciting and a depressing time for me. So, you know, we'll see what happens. So I'm sure I'll be able to get in there at some point in the next 6 months to a year, and hopefully take some photos and kind of write something on the place.
Well, now that I'm an expert, I can come jump the wall with you. But we are thankful that your health is safe. We are thankful DC's making signings, but we're also excited for the future at Audi Field. Of course, RFK will always be hallowed ground in U.S. soccer history. Pablo Maurer, staff writer at The Athletic, for everything on DC United, but so much more going on around world soccer, U.S. soccer, and, of course, all the best empty buildings around the United States. Pablo, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Always appreciate having Pablo on. And he started out that interview talking about Edson Flores, what that signing means to DC. And I agree with him. I think that this signing activates this fan base locally more than what Rooney did, because while you want to bring in those casuals, he mentioned the history at RFK, the culture of DC United, and it was a South American, Central American based culture. Edson Flores is the guy who started in the World Cup for Peru. He will start in Copa America this summer again for a Peruvian national team that's basically setting records as one of their all-time great groups. So you bring that entire fan base in, and then you bring in fans who know who that player is, who watch him consistently, who want to come see him, and as Pablo said, passes the eye test. You add him to the pieces they've already brought in Yamil Assad returning, and Ola Kamara, who they brought in at the end of last year. And I think when you look at what they got last year from Lucho Acosta, who really was just out of it, didn't really want to be a part of the group, 6 goals, 2 assists, but didn't work hard, wasn't involved. Lucas Rodriguez struggled to settle, and then Rooney in and out of the lineup at times. I think when you take the combination of Flores, Assad, Kamara alongside Paul Arriola, how they fit together, how they're going to work for the team, how they're maybe going to fit better into what Ben Olsen wants. Edson Flores, an attacking player who works really hard defensively. We already know what Yamil Assad can do in this league, and Kamara can score goals. I think this is a DC team that when you take those new pieces and you combine them, I think that they look better going forward than they were last year. So it's a team that has almost all their starters returning on the defensive side. They've got their central midfield settled. And, of course, Bill Hamid, a club legend, back in goal full time. I think DC's in a better place right now than they were about 6 months ago. And if they can make another huge signing, a Lozano, a Modric, it would take them over the top as an MLS Cup contender going forward. So exciting times in DC. Also exciting times in Cincinnati. Of course, year one wasn't ideal, wasn't what they wanted, but they've already made one big designated player signing, and we hope a couple more to come. But to talk to us about that is their general manager, Gerard Nienkamp. Gerard, thanks for coming on.
Yes, hello. Good afternoon.
Thank you so much for joining us. Let's start with the big news. You guys brought in a designated player to start out this transfer window, Yuya Kubo from Japan. How did the connection start? Why was he the right signing for this team?
Yuya is already a few years in Europe. He was starting in Young Boys after go to Gent, loan period in Nuremberg, and in my time where I was sporting director in Pek Zwolle, we had a friendly in Belgium on the training facility of Gent, and there he was playing. And yeah, some players you keep in your mind, and Yuya was one of them. And if you're preparing the roster for 2020 and you need a profile like Yuya, of course there are more possibilities, but yeah, we will come in contact with management of Yuya Kubo, and from there on, he is now our second designated player in FC Cincinnati.
For fans out there who maybe haven't seen him, from watching him on tape, he's played as a second forward, he's played on the wing, he's played as a target man. So how do you expect him to be used this year, and what is it about him that you were so attracted to?
Yeah, that's first of all the responsibility of our head coach, of course. I will not tell our head coach, Ron Jans, where I think he has to play, but he can play on the fourth position, four positions up front, on the wing, offensive midfield, but he can also play as a nine. He's a versatile offensive player, comfortable on the ball, good in carrying with the ball, always good vision around him. A player we like also in the way we want to play, positional game, dynamic soccer, in especially when we play at home in Nippert. I think it's a very good fit for our roster.
For you, coming into the club in the middle of this season, How have you worked on what the club already has in existence and what you want to build going forward to bring in a big signing to sort of, normally it's to build around, but you already had 16 contracts in place. So how have you worked on, you know, how to spend big to add to this roster?
Yeah, first of all, of course, to start a study about the rules in MLS and to create a team around me with people who have a good understanding about soccer in the United States. To observe the current roster, it gives me and also Ron, I brought in mid-July, to observe, to analysis the current roster and to see who the players were we want to continue in 2020 and also the players we did want to continue. So, yeah, that's the job we are doing now, that we are in the middle of the process. We want to add some more players, but, of course, there is also for some players no future in the club, and that's normal because our head coach and the coaching staff cannot train with 30 players on the pitch in Tucson, where we're going next week.
We mentioned, of course, you and the designated player signing. You still have one spot open. There have been heavy rumors in the media that you are approaching a number 10 potentially even one from Holland in Gaston Pereira, a Uruguayan number 10. Can you give fans an update on what the progress is there?
Yes, I think that's not so many news on this player. What I spoke yesterday also about with other colleagues of you, we have an agreement with PSV about the transfer fee terms, and now we are still in negotiation with management of Gaston Pereira to find also an agreement on the salary part, and hopefully we can say hello to him in the next 48 hours here in Cincinnati.
It's an exciting timeline, an exciting time, of course, for FC Cincinnati. Whether that move happens or not, how much more work should fans expect to be done on this roster going into the 2020 season?
Yeah, of course, also we are looking for more other players. And also if in this 48 hours Gaston will not join the club, then, of course, we have also Plan B and Plan C. Because there are more good players in the world, in the market. So, if we will get that signing, then we are also looking for another 9 who can play together with Brandon Vasquez and Rashan Daly in the 9 position. And if we can find a good player for the right wing position, we will also very curious and focus on that.
So fans should expect, whether it's Pereira or someone else, there will be a 10 brought in this window heading into the season?
Yes, correct.
And you mentioned those attacking pieces to add. Defensively, you did a lot of work early on. You brought Andrew Gutman in, of course, at the end of last year as well. Do you feel strong about the way this team ended, much better the last month and a half defensively, going into 2020?
I think so, and I also hope so, but execution day is the 1st of March when we play the first match in New York against Red Bull. But how we prepare, how we design the roster, we are feeling comfortable with the defensive part, the competition we create on these positions, and in the way we want to play next season. I think we had some good, great added values. But one more time, execution day will be starting from the 1st of March.
When you look at this club and what you're working on and what you're building out, what do maybe something that people don't know from the outside that's going on that you're excited about inside of FC Cincinnati?
Ooh, that's a good question, but also a difficult question to answer. But what's directly popping up is the great culture I think we have here in this club. Everyone is feeling aligned, from ownership till the people who are selling the tickets for this season for Nippert. and everyone in between. And I think that's a big strength go for our goals we have this season, and helping us to build this city and this club to the next level.
One of the guys who's a major part of that, and you've mentioned already, Ron Jans, the head manager who you brought in last year, uses the term interim before you hired him and then kind of stepped back from that. Can you give us maybe an idea of what the next year or two looks like from the management point of view, what your plans are for FC Cincinnati?
Yes. I had a lot of questions to answering when I talked about that time about an interim situation with Ron, because there was a wrong explanation of the situation from my side, maybe that I'm coming from Holland and I'm not very familiar with the English language, but okay, I'm learning also every day. But Ron was from the first time our guy, and of course, with every position you take in a club or in an organization, you have to find out if that is a good fit, if everyone is on board. So you don't want to make a connection directly for 3 years or 4 years, so you start somewhere. But we are very convinced that Ron is the right guy on the right position and helping us to build the club again to the next stage and make the roster better.
You mentioned your background, of course. You're from Holland. You've worked in the Middle East as well. We've seen in this offseason in Major League Soccer a lot of movement between Central and South American players coming in to Major League Soccer. Your work has been a lot of players coming over from Europe. Do you believe that there's a market where you can have a top-level competitive MLS team where the bulk of your players are coming between Europe and Major League Soccer, or are you looking maybe to expand more in terms of scouting and signings throughout South and Central America?
Soccer is universal in many ways. So first of all, we want to have good players. And if the player is coming from Japan or the player is coming from the Netherlands or from Uruguay, it doesn't matter. It's about quality on the technical side and on the mental side, on the fitness side. So that means we are looking everywhere. And now we sign a player from Japan who was playing in Europe, yes. Maybe we will sign a player from who's playing the last couple of years in the Netherlands, but's coming from Uruguay, South America, and maybe the other signing will come from this beautiful country, the United States of America. But it's all about quality and not about nationality.
One of your backgrounds, especially in Holland and the Middle East, was youth development academy. Some of the best in the world, of course, in Holland. That's a big part of what's going on in the United States. You've only been there a short time, but how do you feel about the setup that FC Cincinnati has in potentially bringing in local players and your ideas of how to help guys like Frankie Amaya and Andrew Groupman improve?
That is a dream for this club. To make the debut for a first homegrown player as soon as possible. But we know also that our academy is a startup and it needs time to build and to improve, to add also teams. So for 21, we will add for 20, sorry, but for the second part of the season, we will add also an under-19, so to close the gap a little bit with the first team and the academy. But it is, of course, very important. If you have young players in an early age in your development program, you can help them to grow, to go through the pathway, what is needed to become a professional player. And one more time, to get your homegrown players in your first team, attached, aligned with the region. And I think that's very important also for our supporters who will joining the games this season.
One of the parts of the youth development structure that's been successful for some teams is a USL team reserve group that they play either USL League One or Championship. Where is FC Cincinnati at in terms of potentially doing that themselves?
Yeah, we didn't make a decision on that. Good question. I'm convinced that also FC Cincinnati needs a reserve team. What we need, an under-19 to close the gap with a reserve team, we do it even better. But if that is with a partnership with a USL team or we do it by ourselves and we can maybe in partnership with the MLS to create enclosed competition. What we have also in the Netherlands, that could be also very helpful to give this player the opportunity to make the final step to the first team.
Gerard Nienkamp, general manager of FC Cincinnati, a big year coming up, year two in Major League Soccer, already a couple big signings done in this offseason, but it sounds like the next few hours are going to be very busy for Mr. Nienkamp. So, Gerard, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gerard. Have a great day. Good luck with everything.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
Thank you to Gerard Nienkamp for coming on. Apologize again for asking questions about his term of the use, interim. I am very sorry for that. But one thing that was interesting that he said or did not say was in mentioning that strike force, the attack, he didn't mention Darren Maddox's name, and he didn't mention Fernando Adi. And we didn't ask him about Adi, but of course, Adi was the first ever designated player in FC Cincinnati history. Was not a good year last year. Struggled to score in the end. Wasn't even a part of the team. We don't expect him to even be on the roster going into the 2020 season, but that is something that they still have to deal with. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Maddox as well. As promised, Andrew Riebe still in LA, you know, just lapping up the sunshine while I'm here suffering by myself in a cavernous studio alone in New York. He sat down with Mark Dos Santos. What is the future for Vancouver? A lot of promise going into last year, not a ton of results in the end. And he also sat down with Daniel Royer to talk a little trash talk, not to Royer, but about how you do it in Major League Soccer. So more from LA, back out to Andrew.
All right, 10 minutes with Mark Dos Santos, head coach of the Vancouver Whitecaps. Mark, we did this last year, and we talked about rebuilding a club and a culture. I think if the math is right, I think 7 of the offseason signings from last year no longer with the club. So I wonder what you define this moment in time for the Whitecaps as.
I think it's a very exciting moment. I'm very positive about it. I know clearly what's happening in the inside of the club, not only with the addition of someone like Axel or even Mark. And last year was necessary if we want to get to where we want to get one day. And it was a year that, you know, we had to struggle or suffer a little bit more, but trying to keep still things in perspective. You know, we lost 16 games, like San Jose, like Colorado, Galaxy lost 15, Houston lost 18. Problem is we had a lot of ties. The team with more ties in the West. So we evaluated all of that. But then we also saw some needs, some things that were good and some that are crucial needs if we want to follow what's going on in the MLS. Okay, it's been said that we're not going to be the team that spends like LAFC or the Galaxy or Atlanta. That's enough, you know, to speak about always spending like others. I think the league or people around the league, we spend too much time talking about spending. Us, we have to focus on what we want to be as a club. And we're excited about not only the humility of our ownership, also recognizing what was needed for us to become better. The moves we're doing, some that are official and others that are not, but are very exciting, and I'm looking forward to that we do those announcements. We're able to build the foundations of a culture and a structure. Last year when we went to preseason in day one, we brought, I think, 14 players from the academy. This year, no, because we have a lot of the roster together. So all those things are going to make us grow as a team, and that's what we want.
You talk about those changes, new executives, and Axel, a new CEO as well.
Yeah.
What are the things, you use the word humility, what are the things that the club looked back and said, not quite working right there? This is a hole that has to be filled. This needs new leadership. This needs a new perspective. What was missing?
That was from day one. You know, if you're the day one that when I arrived, we looked at what was the needs, where do we need to become stronger, what do we need to do. And if you're a lower, if you're in the lower base of spending and salaries, well, you need to make sure that your scouting department is the best in the league, right? If you don't spend as much as the others, you have to be careful with that. When what was happening is that our scouting department was very raw and our spending was low. And then that becomes more difficult in the recruiting side. And then the fact that you change 18 players because you want to go in another direction, but you're not an expansion team. You don't have expansion draft. All of that makes
the allocation money they have, don't have it.
No, so all of that made it difficult to build the team with the characteristics that you want. But we knew that with two or three windows, we would be in a position to grow a lot. And that's what's going on right now. What Axel is doing is he's helping a lot with Greg on the soccer side. We needed somebody more in the soccer side. And I think that allows us to grow a lot in the culture. It allows us to grow in building our scouting department, all areas that you need if you want to grow as a club. And the effects of that has been very clear on how we're addressing the window, how we're addressing becoming better. And it's there's a lot of clarity today, I would say, in the club. Still not what fans could see, but who's working inside the club every day is very optimistic where we're going.
When I look at the depth chart, I see holes. And you see holes with every club. Yeah. Every depth chart has holes right now. Yeah. Where do you see holes?
Today, the problem is if we would do this interview next week,
You might have some pegs to put in the
today,
holes.
Today. And I don't want to specify a position because then it creates
Let's not call them holes. But let's call them areas to reinforce.
I would
reinforce.
Tell you that in the midfield, there's an area there that we need to become better. We need to become a little bit more dynamic, more quality, more options for sure. We're still in the need of at least two attacking players. You know, to say only Cavallini is coming here and with all the solutions, it's not true. You know, and that cast of okay, who's the other attacking pieces around him? It's important. So I would tell you those are the two biggest areas right now of concern. And I also think that eventually, in the medium long term, we're gonna need another center back to help. It's not an emergency now, but looking at the dynamics of everything, I think it's gonna be an area that we're gonna look at eventually.
How does Lucas Cavallini change what you're able to do as a coach?
Look, if you just go back to our last seven games, where the team was, or six games, three wins, two draws, one loss. Our guy like Toss Ricketts, just because of his workload, his mentality, helping the team press in the first line, how much it brought us to become better. Well, we wanted to get a player that would be able to do that, but also have more, I would say, more success in the box. Lucas brings that. Lucas has proven everywhere that he could score, but there's something in his game, in his workload, in his mentality, in his commitment to what a team is that is very important for us. There's a play in the last game that we watched of Puebla. Puebla is up 3-0 in a game that is over at the 92nd minute. Lucas scored one in that game and assisted two. And there's a play where the team loses possession and he sprints all the way to his half to tackle an opponent when the game was done. And it's a sign of commitment to the team, regardless if you were the best player that night or the time and the clock. And we need more of that. I think the game is evolving so much in the intensity level, not only in Europe. You saw it with the Libertadores final, River Flamengo. So much intensity more and more in the game that for us, it's non-negotiable. Players arriving at the club, it needs to be players with a very high level of intensity in their game.
We have one more question for you. And some of our listeners probably don't know the ins and outs, as you do, of course, of Vancouver and the Whitecaps and where you're going. What are reasonable expectations for the Vancouver Whitecaps this year?
We want to see growth, and I'll give you a clear example. San Jose didn't make the playoffs last year, but we saw growth. We want to see growth, where, and we believe there's going to be a lot of growth. Where that's going to bring us, we don't know. For me to be another coach here that's going to tell you make the playoffs, everybody says that. Some say MLS Cup. But another goal that we have is reaching the Canadian Championship Final and hopefully win it. We believe that's something that is realistic for us.
Year two of the Mark Dos Santos Project of Vancouver. Thanks for chatting, Coach.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
All right, 10 minutes with Daniel Royer of the New York Red Bulls. And Danny, a little bird told me that you are a talker on the field to your opponents. And maybe not all the time, but certainly to one Anton Tennerholm of NYCFC. Is that true or false? That's a big pause.
It's more false than true.
Okay, which part is true?
That we were talking trash on the field. That is true. But in general, I'm not a trash talker on the field. I'm pretty quiet, actually. More talking to my teammates than to the opponents. But there was one particular game where he started talking trash. So, of course, I talked trash back. And then the following games that we had,
it just carried on.
Carried on.
Things happen that way.
Yeah.
What's your style when you're confronted by Anton Tennerholm, the trash talker? What are you responding with?
Sometimes I don't respond at all
because
I just think it's funny.
What's he saying that's funny?
Oh, I can't tell you. Cannot.
That's fine.
But yeah, sometimes I have to throw something bad back at him.
Yeah.
But it's not too bad. Like, it's just, you know, a little trash talk. It's not getting too aggressive or...
Doesn't go over the line.
No, it doesn't.
Did you you ever play with Sal Zizzo? Was he with the Red Bulls while you were there?
Yeah.
So Sal dislikes Anton Tennerholm a lot.
Okay.
Have you heard his podcast? Binny and Sal podcast. Binny and Ike. Sorry, Ike.
Yeah, no, I have. I've heard some of them, but not all of them.
So they have a running bit on that show where Sal talks about how Anton Tennerholm is the most annoying player in Major League Soccer. Sal a trustworthy guy? Should we trust Sal's opinion of other people? Does he have personalities pegged in this case?
I mean, I always trusted Sal, yeah.
All right.
Just talk about the past.
We'll let that go then. New York Derby, how have you experienced it, man?
Tennerholm?
Tennerholm or just the Derby?
Yeah, the Derby are the greatest games, I think. You know, especially for the fans. There's more pressure. There's more excitement, and that's what soccer is about. You want to win the Derby. You want to be the team in New York, number one. And, you know, the games can get aggressive. I think it was never too bad. There's also trash talking, obviously. Yeah. But games are heated, and, yeah, those are great games, and I've experienced that in Austria as well in different derbies. That's always nice.
So this offseason has been a quiet one for a lot of teams, but the Red Bulls included. When you're looking at the goals that you have collectively, personally, does it surprise you that more players haven't been brought in yet? Or do you try to keep yourself separate from that side of the business?
I mean, the transfer period is not over yet.
That's fair.
You know, so I don't know how the squad will look like at the beginning of the season. But obviously, I hope that we put out a squad that's really able to compete.
What's the difference between Jesse and Chris?
I think there's a lot of similarities, and they're very communicative. They always try to connect with the players, talk to the players. They want to make the players feel comfortable on and off the field. Obviously following the same style of play, same philosophy like all the other Red Bull teams. And yeah, I mean, that's it.
How fit are you? I'm asking you because I watch the way you guys play, and I can't imagine the level of commitment it takes, not on the field, although that is true, but in the times you're not actually playing, to build up to that level.
Like right now?
Not right now, just in general. Like when the season comes, is that a level that you were at in the past, or is this a different sort of fitness than you've ever experienced before?
it's a different sort of fitness, I think, because with the pressing system, it's just so unique and just different to all the other teams that I've played in. And, you know, right now in off season, you're trying to get back in shape day by day and a little slower. But then when preseason starts, you got to turn it on and then to be ready for the first game in March. But it's...
How's it different? Is it ability to have multiple bursts a game in short periods? How do you train it? How do you get yourself up to a point where you can actually be effective in that system?
I mean, you have to be fit mentally as well, because you always have to be in it, and everybody has to, you know, press at the same time, be on the same page all the time. But it's also, you know, about intervals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That you have a lot of sprints in the game and be connected with the game, with the team all the time, defend all the time. And you can never like really turn off. You can never cheat. And it's that's where I think it's a different kind of fitness. It's pretty difficult to explain for me in English, but
in some ways it sounds like maybe more mental than physical. The physical is important.
Yeah.
But you can't get there without that mental side.
That's right.
All right. That's it from us, man. That's 10 minutes. Danny, we'll watch next time you and Anton go at it, all right?
Thanks, appreciate it.
Andrew's having a blast out in LA. We're going to have more from Media Marketing, his sit-downs with players and coaches coming up on Monday, a special episode on Martin Luther King Jr. Day when we won't be in the studio once again, but plenty of content. And while it is preseason, the games have finally started. NYCFC losing to Corinthians in the Florida Cup yesterday. So the games are coming. Don't worry. Every team about to get together, about to meet. And one other game that did go down a little bit quietly was the Canadian national team playing not an A-friendly, but a game against Iceland out in California. And they fell 1-0 to Iceland. And that is a huge result for Canada, who's trying to get the coefficient right to get into the hex as the sixth and final team. That'll be decided next June through the FIFA World Standings. They are chasing El Salvador on points. That was a big result to go against Canada. It could be a tough road for them, but the reality of it always was they were going to have to win tough games. They were going to have to win games that they haven't won in the past. John Herdman has talked about games against big rivals, games against teams in the region that Canada hasn't been able to get the results in over the last 25 years. That doesn't change either way, but it'll be interesting to see how that goes down. So we'll be back on Monday with all of those interviews from Media Marketing. For myself,